This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
Okay, Dana, take it over.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dana Bouchard. I'm one of the best interest attorneys in Circuit 20. I actually share an office with Miguel Kunkel, and we're in Charlotte County, and we have Jana Anderson, one of our other colleagues. She's out of the Fort Myers branch. So I'm going to talk first, give you guys a little bit of an introduction with regard to contempt, and then both Jana and Miguel are going to follow it up and talk about civil and criminal contempt. So the question is, so what is contempt? It's basically the refusal to obey a legal order, a mandate, or a decree by a judge after due notice thereof. And this is in reference to Section 38.23 of our Florida statutes. Sometimes you wonder if there's a case law definition. Is there one that defines contempt? Actually, yes, there is. The ones that we were able to find, the definition is an act tending to embarrass, hinder, or obstruct the court and the administration of justice, or to lessen its authority or dignity. And this is out of the Morrell case, out of the 4th DCA. Another one we also found was it tends to be a conduct that interferes with or impugns judicial function, not whether it causes a judge to feel aggrieved or upset. And this is via the state out of the 2nd DCA. So how many kinds of contempt can there be? With every contempt, it's going to either be direct contempt or indirect, and you're also going to have it either be civil or criminal. It's kind of a twofer. So you're going to have one or the other, and then you're also going to have it be criminal or civil. So what's a good definition of what a direct contempt is? A direct contempt is something that you guys will see that occurs in the actual presence of the court, while an indirect contempt is something that occurs outside the presence of the court. So what exactly is criminal contempt, you may ask? Criminal contempt is a kind of contempt that's actually designed to punish or vindicate the authority of the court. And civil contempt does not have that punishment aspect or that vindicative aspect. Civil contempt is a contempt that's designed to actually compel someone to do something, to comply with a court order, or to compensate an aggrieved party that may have been wronged. There is a distinction, a very clear distinction, between civil and criminal contempt. Civil contempt is actually designed to obtain compliance with the court order, and criminal contempt is designed to punish a wrongdoing by someone. So a question sometimes comes up, how do you know if something is going to be a civil or a criminal contempt? The determination is actually not whether the proceedings are civil or criminal. It actually goes to the nature of the contemptuous act. It's not necessarily dependent on the nature of the cause from which the contempt citation arose. So you kind of have to look at what the actual nature of the alleged act is, and it's not necessarily dependent on, you know, how it arose. So just a little note, Miguel and I and Janet have found during our research that you can actually have a criminal contempt in a civil case, and you can also have a civil contempt in a criminal case. So one or the other doesn't necessarily... just because you're civil doesn't mean you can't have a criminal contempt in your hearings. So you're next going to hear from Ms. Janet Anderson, and she's going to brief you on civil contempt. And then after Janet, you're going to hear from Miguel, and he'll brief you all on criminal contempt. So I will leave it over to my colleagues at this point.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Janet Anderson, attorney in the Fort Myers office, and I'm going to speak specifically about direct civil contempt, since that seems to be the area that we would most likely be involved with. The indirect civil contempt is actually a tool to coerce someone to obey a court order. In order to be able to use the civil contempt, the indirect civil contempt process, the order of which that you're trying to coerce someone to obey must be clear and definite. In dependency court, we often are ordering our community-based service providers to do certain things for our parents, make certain arrangements, and we must be clear in the court's order as to time frame and who would be performing those tasks in order to keep the door open for a civil contempt motion in the future. The contemner, the person who has not complied with the order, must have the ability to comply with the order. We have a situation here in Lee County where we were trying to bring a pair of brothers together for a sibling visit. One brother is placed up in Tallahassee. The other was placed down here in Lee County. Both brothers had safety plans that precluded them staying together in the same room. We had a long discussion about how we would force the department to make these arrangements, and it stretched out for months until the arrangements were made. But the community-based service provider was able to show that they did not have the ability to find, they were unable to find a location where they could accommodate both boys and still obey the safety plan. So there has to be that process proven. When you file a motion for indirect civil contempt, you must follow the rules of civil due process. Your contemner must have adequate notice, have to be given an opportunity to be heard, but a jury trial is not required. The contemner has the right to counsel, but the state is not required to appoint counsel on their behalf. Again, if we're dealing with our service providers, they do have counsel. If we're dealing with a parent, they have counsel as well, but specific counsel does not have to be appointed for this proceeding. The burden of proof is on the contemner to prove by a preponderance of the evidence why he or she was unable to comply, so it's not a particularly high bar. The contender should be warned that a failure to appear could result in a possibility of writ of bodily attachment, and there must be a pert provision included. I'm sorry?
Sorry to interject. Everyone, please, if you hear me, mute your lines, please.
Okay. May I continue?
Yes, go ahead and continue, please.
I'm sorry?
Yes, go ahead and continue, please.
Okay, thank you. After a hearing on your motion for indirect civil contempt, the order, if the judge finds in your favor, the order must contain an adjudication of guilt of civil contempt of court. It must include the date of the original order that was not complied with. It must include an affirmative finding that the contemner willfully violated the order and had the present ability to comply with the order. With the original order of the court, and it must include an affirmative finding that the contemner was had the present ability to comply with the purge provisions. So if you are in a hearing on an indirect civil contempt and the contemner says, I can get this done within 48 hours, that would be your purge provision. So that they would avoid any further penalties as long as they comply with the original order within that time frame. So, again, this is really a coercive tool more than a tool for punishment. The order must set forth the number of days for confinement if the purge is not completed and set forth those purge provisions. So going into this, you need to know what it is you want coming out of it. If you prove the indirect civil contempt, the judge makes all the findings that must be contained in the order, you need to know what it is you want to get out of it. And obviously, the main thing that you want is the the performance of whatever was in the original order that you are complaining of. The procedure for civil indirect civil contempt is contained in Rule 8.286. The rule is very, very specific. It sets out the sanctions under the rule must be limited to those used to compel compliance with a court order or to compensate the move-on for losses sustained as a result of the contemnor's willful failure to comply with the court order. The indirect civil contempt can be initiated with a motion, and there must be notice given for the failure to appear, as well as what the motion contains, and the hearing must provide the contemnor with an opportunity to be heard. And in that hearing, the court will make the determinations as laid out in what must be concluded in the order, that there was a prior order entered and that the alleged contemnor had failed to comply with all or part of that order, and that the contemnor has the present ability to comply. That's the other key element in trying a case like this. And then the judge may enter a written order granting or denying the motion for contempt, and the order finding the contemnor to be in contempt must contain, as I said before, a finding that the prior order was entered, that the alleged contemnor has failed to comply with that order, and that the alleged contemnor had the present ability to comply, and that they willfully failed to comply with the prior court order. So again, at the very beginning, when you're filing, say, a motion to compel and you get an order compelling a certain action, it's important to make that order as specific as possible with a date for performance so that you can then file your indirect civil contempt motion and cite to that approved order. If you set forth a criteria for a purge, in other words, the judge finds the contemnor in indirect civil contempt and in the order gives them a certain number of time to amount of time to comply, and they still do not comply with that order, then the move-ont, which would be you, must file an affidavit of noncompliance with the court to move forward with the punitive aspect of the civil contempt. And I apologize, I indicated in our outline that the rule was attached, and I don't know that it was when you received your email for this presentation, but it is Rule 8.286 of the Florida Rules of Juvenile Procedure. Any questions?
Janet, this is Donnie. Is Miguel going to be doing any follow-up after you?
Miguel is going to handle the criminal portion.
Okay, thank you.
And with that, I will turn it over to Miguel.
Thank you, Janet. Hello, everyone. I'm going to be handling the criminal contempt aspect of this presentation. And as stated earlier, my name is Miguel Kunkel, 20th. And as stated earlier, there's two types of criminal contempt. We have direct and indirect. In our courtrooms, probably direct is the most common that we may come into contact with. It's basically in Rule 8.285A of the Florida Rules of Juvenile Procedure. The original rule was Florida Rules of Criminal Procedure 3.830, and that's pretty much been codified into our rule now. So pay attention to the rule because you really have to follow it verbatim. There's a lot of due process requirements with this being criminal in nature. So the majority of contempts that are criminal, at least in our dependency court, they're usually reversed on appeal, and they're reversed because the procedures weren't followed. And it's obvious because usually it's an emotional type of thing why contempt would even come up to begin with. and therefore it's easy to forget to follow the rules in the heat of the moment. So just be sure to read the rule. It's really broken down into six different sections. The first section is it allows for summary punishment, meaning the judge can punish the contempt on the spot because the facts are really not an issue. They've been observed by the judge. It's conduct that occurs in the presence of the court and probably in the presence of all the parties. The third aspect is prior to adjudication, the defendant must be informed of the accusation and given an opportunity to show cause why he or she should not be found guilty of contempt. And that's very important. That's often not done, where you're allowed to show some mitigating circumstances. It's also contained in the fourth aspect, which is if contempt is found, you must give the defendant an opportunity to present evidence of excusing or mitigating circumstances prior to sentencing. Now, in the direct contempt, intent is not really one of the elements to prove that the contempt occurred. However, intent or the lack thereof could be one of the excusing or mitigating circumstances. And the fifth aspect, judgment shall be signed, entered of record, and pronounced in open court. And the written judgment of guilt must include a recital of facts. And that's very important because it has to be very specific as to what occurred. It can't be a generalization or a conclusion about what happened. So all parties, including the appellate court, should be able to see from the record, from the transcript, exactly what happened in court that caused the contempt. So as opposed to what the civil contempt that Ms. Anderson was talking about, the burden of proof is higher. This is beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's the standard here. So it truly is a criminal proceeding. It's punitive in nature, and it may involve incarceration, the loss of freedom. So that's why all the constitutional protections come into play. Is there a right to counsel? That's one of the main questions that comes up in a direct contempt. The answer is no, because the rule provides for summary punishment. Appointed counsel is not required for the defendant, and that's the case law on that is Williams versus State, 698 Southern 2nd, 1350, and it's a first DCA case. What kind of conduct occurs in the presence of the court? Well, all the essential elements of misconduct must take place under the eye of the court and be actually observed by the court. Direct contempt is not permitted where the alleged conduct took place at an earlier time or before a different trial judge. So that's important. One of the examples in one of the cases that we saw was the example was one of the parties told the judge to quote-unquote bite yourself in the elevator of the courthouse even after he identified himself as a judge. The problem is it didn't happen while the judge was on the bench and he wasn't in his official capacity. So that was not considered a contempt, and that contempt was reversed. That was out of the second DCA, which is our District Court of Appeal here in the 20th. Use of foul language in the hallway, this may happen in your cases, outside courtroom. As long as that language wasn't meant to interrupt or hinder the judicial proceedings, it will not be considered a contempt or a direct contempt. By way of example, in another case, there was a juvenile that appeared for a juvenile delinquency hearing, and he kicked the courtroom door, and the bailiff was following behind him, and he basically told the bailiff to go blank yourself. It was very loud. The judge heard it. People in the courtroom heard it, and that direct contempt was upheld because they found that it was calculated to lessen the court's authority or dignity since he was being so disrespectful at that time. It's improper to find defendant in contempt for showing up in court with marijuana in his system because, as the judge stated in that case, quote-unquote, if somebody comes into my court with marijuana in his system, he's in contempt of court. Well, that's not how it works. The defendant in this case basically admitted that he did smoke marijuana a week ago, and there was no evidence that he was currently under the influence or had violated a court order not to smoke marijuana. So, again, that was a second DCA case, MW versus Loftime. Now, by way of example, a defendant who passed out in the courtroom because, by his own admission, he had a little coke being cocaine, that morning did obstruct the administration of justice and could be properly held in direct criminal contempt. And that was a case out of the third DCA, Miller v. State. So what about profanity or disrespectful conduct, which you called before? Directly calling the judge an SOB is definitely a direct contempt, and that's Saunders v. State. That was the first DCA case. Use of profanity to judge justifies direct contempt. However, one continuous outburst may only be punished with one contempt. So, again, everyone has to try to help the trial court judges to keep their cool, and this shouldn't be done in anger, but should be done to enforce respect and to carry out justice, and not for personal reasons or personal animosity. So, again, due process requirements, very important. Scrupulous compliance with Rule 3.830 or our own rule that we mentioned earlier and under the juvenile rules is required because it's the essence of due process. Prior to an adjudication of guilt for direct criminal contempt, the trial court must provide the contemptor an opportunity to be heard. That's one of the big mistakes that happens often. The defendant also must be provided an opportunity to present evidence of excusing or mitigating circumstances. If you do not do that, or if the trial judge doesn't do that, it will be reversed on appeal. So what about when we have a case where there's an erroneous order? A defendant may be held in contempt for failing to comply with an erroneous order. The way to handle that is to take either a writ or to take a direct appeal and to straighten it out there and make your objections, preserve those objections on the record, but not to disobey that order. The only time you can disobey an order is one where the court has no jurisdiction over the subject matter. So, again, that would be taking a big risk by anybody who wants to try to commit behavior that would be a direct contempt in that situation. So something we may have in our cases, failures to appear. I know a failure to appear at a mediation hearing is indirect contempt. It's not direct contempt, and that's Fredericks versus Sturgis, 598 Southern 2nd, 94. It's a 5th DCA case. By the same token, defendant who failed to appear for sentencing could be held in direct criminal contempt under the same theory as a person who fails to appear at trial pursuant to a subpoena. And that's Woods versus State, 600 Southern 2nd, 27. So that's a 4th DCA case as well. And that might happen in one of our cases. Moving on to punishment now, your fines and sanctions, Section 775.02 of the Florida statutes, a fine for direct criminal contempt shall not exceed $500. So that's pretty straightforward. There was a case where an award of attorney's fees for another party or a court's wasted time in a criminal contempt proceeding is improper. That's not the way to use contempt. It shouldn't be done for that, and that shouldn't be the type of fine in a direct criminal contempt. Moving on to incarceration. Criminal contempt is a crime in the ordinary sense. However, contempt itself is neither a felony nor a misdemeanor. It's something in between. So Section 38.22 of the Florida statutes authorizes courts to punish for contempt, but that statute doesn't state any maximum punishment. So therefore, 775.02 provides that when no maximum punishment is provided by statute for criminal conduct, punishment shall not exceed imprisonment for 1 year and $500 fine. So criminal contempt convictions are subject to the provisions of Section 775.02. So the period of incarceration has to be for a year or less, and the fine cannot exceed $500. So by the same token, a sentence of 6 months or under may be properly imposed upon conviction without a trial by jury. However, if the judge contemplates a criminal sentence that will exceed 6 months, then you have to impanel a jury, and the defendant is entitled to a trial by jury, and that's under the United States Constitution. Order of contempt, because a contemptuous conduct may well be in the form of statements or actions that are not part of a court proceeding and that are not recorded, the judgment of guilt or of contempt shall include a recital of those facts upon which the adjudication of guilt is based. Has to be very specific. There was one court order in a particular case that the quote was, the defendant committed injudicious, unethical, and intemperate conduct before the court, end of quote, and that was not sufficient. It has to be very specific facts. They have to be stated in particularity in order for everyone to know why an individual is held in contempt. Now, indirect criminal contempt is more common because those are for things that need to be punished that happened outside of the court, violations of court orders, or that happened outside the presence of the court. And that's contained, again, in Florida Rule of Criminal Procedure 3.840, but it's been codified in our juvenile rules under 8.285, subsection B. And the definition is, indirect criminal contempt is contemptuous conduct that has occurred outside the presence of the judge. Since the conduct occurs outside the presence, summary disposition is not available. And that means it can't be punished on the spot. There's other due process requirements. And it pretty much lays them out. Read the actual rule. It has seven sections. They start off with order to show cause. It's a sworn affidavit. That's how it has to be. That's how the proceedings get started. They could be sua sponte as well. They permit motions and answers, but it's not necessary. Defendants could be arrested if there's a fear that they won't appear for the hearing later on. There could be an arraignment as well. Part five of that rule pertains to the disqualification of the judge. If the contempt charge involves disrespect to or criticism of that particular judge, and then it also spells out the verdict and judgment, and then the sentence. So please read that carefully if you're going to go to indirect criminal contempt. There's a lot more judicial due process requirements. The first one that's apparent is the defendants are entitled to court-appointed counsel if they're indigent. So that's very important. In order to show cause, is a charging document that is used in cases with indirect criminal contempt. The order to show cause must state essential facts constituting the criminal contempt charge and require that the defendant appear before the court to show cause why he should not be held in contempt of court. It should also warn the defendant that if there's a conviction, that jail time might be involved. That's very important as well. As stated earlier, the defendant could be arrested. A defendant must be present in order for a criminal contempt proceeding to take place. It can't be done in the defendant's absence. Burden of proof is, again, beyond a reasonable doubt. There was one case where the judge placed the burden of going forward on the defendant in a proceeding and did not require proof beyond reasonable because, in that case, the due process rights were violated. Where the contemnor claims an inability to comply with the court order as a defense for contempt, the alleged contemnor has the burden of proving that by preponderance of evidence why he or she was unable to obey the court order, so therefore you do have affirmative defenses. Court reporter has to be present or it has to have a court smart or an audio a transcript of the proceeding. They must be reported like any other criminal proceeding. An adjudication of contempt is required to be reversed where final hearing was not reported and defendant has presented a facially sufficient claim of error that cannot be refuted by record since there is no record in that case. So there has to be a record or else it's going to be reversed. The disqualification of the judge is pretty straightforward. There was a case where the judge wasn't required to disqualify himself, where the attorney was charged with indirect criminal contempt, except for failure to appear for trial. The record did not indicate that obstruction of court and the administration of justice constituted personal disrespect for that judge, so therefore it wasn't personal in nature, so he did not. In another case, the court stated that a judge need not recuse himself simply because the contempt was committed against him or a court of which he is a member. A judge generally is not disqualified merely because he initiated the contempt proceeding sua sponte as well. So that would really have to be something specific towards that particular judge for that judge to recuse himself or herself. Due process, again, proceedings for indirect criminal contempt are effectively criminal in nature, therefore an accused is entitled to the same basic constitutional due process protections as those afforded criminal defendants in more typical criminal proceedings. The order to show cause, again, must be very specific. The indirect criminal contempt proceedings should afford a defendant an appropriate charging document, an answer, an order of arrest, if necessary, right to bail, an arraignment, and a hearing before an adjudication. In order to show cause for indirect criminal contempt, which is not based on sworn affidavit and which does not contain the essential facts, cannot stand, it's legally insufficient. There doesn't even have to be, it's fundamental error so that you don't even have to preserve that objection for appeal if those strict procedural requirements are not followed. So everyone should really keep that in mind when if you ever get to a point where you want to use one of these. Notice is provided by an order to show cause. The language of the order must be sufficiently clear and precise. And it must, again, like stated earlier, warn the criminal defendant of possible jail time or criminal penalties. There was a case where due process required a time period of more than 2 days after service of the order to show cause so that that defendant could prepare a sufficient legal defense. In another case, there was a case where a lawyer was fined $100 per word for every word said to the media in violation of a court's gag order. That fine was unlawful because it exceeded the $500 limit, the threshold of 775.02. If a request for a jury trial is denied, that automatically makes the term of imprisonment, if found guilty, less than 6 months because that jury trial was denied. And that case is Wells versus State, 654 Southern 2nd, 146. That's out of the 3rd DCA. As stated earlier, intent is an essential element of indirect criminal contempt. So the intent has to be there. The actus reus has to be there, just like a criminal proceeding. A defendant could not be found in contempt of court for a late appearance caused by the breakdown of his automobile because that went to intent. In that case, of course, the defendant didn't have the intent for his automobile to break down on the way to court. Orders of contempt, written findings of fact, not required for indirect criminal contempt. If there's sufficient oral findings made on the record and there's that availability of that transcript is available for appeal. So some more examples. One case in the hallway outside court after losing a civil case, the defendant called counsel for the plaintiff two expletives and threatened her by saying he would see her later. The name calling was found not to be indirect criminal contempt, but the threat or intimidation of an attorney who was an officer of the court justified the finding of contempt. And that was a case, Hoffer versus State, 696 Southern 2nd, 1265, and it's a 4th DCA case. Again, there's a right to counsel. They have to be entitled to a court-appointed counsel if they're indigent. There is one caveat to that. There was a case where counsel does not have to be provided if judge prior to trial files a statement in writing that the defendant will not be in prison in the event of conviction. So if there's no threat of jail time in one of these proceedings, just the fine aspect of it, then and court-appointed counsel is not necessary. So that's pretty interesting. And that was, again, Section 27.512 Florida statutes. Support obligations. Criminal contempt could be heard in a support obligation for child support. It shouldn't be used for any other type of debt. So one case, Williams versus Williams, it was improper to find former husband in contempt for failure to pay an equitable distribution obligation. So I'll open it up at this point in time for any questions. I know there was a lot of material that we just went over. Anyone have any questions so far?
All right. It doesn't seem like it, Miguel.